Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Global Supply Chain Practice Head for Morgan Phillips Executive Search. It's my pleasure to have with us today Laura Behrens-Wu, CEO of Shippo. Shippo is the best multi-carrier shipping software which empowers retailers, e-commerce platforms, marketplaces, logistics providers with the building blocks they need to succeed with shipping. They basically offer Amazon-level shipping for all their clients. Processing millions of shipments each month for roughly 35,000 customers, they've grown to a team of close to 100 staff and have raised around $29 million so far from various investors. Laura is the founder and CEO of Shippo. She, together with her partner Simon Crutz, started Shippo in 2013. And it's a very interesting background that she has, because her first experience was with working as an intern at a startup company called LendUp, which was a Y Combinator alumni startup. Some of you guys might know Y Combinator as the Combinator that invested in Dropbox, Airbnb, and many other top startups. So Laura started there. Has a very interesting background also in terms of where she grew up, because it's a combination of Germany, China, Ecuador, and Cairo. She went to school in Switzerland and started Shippo in the US. So very, very interesting story there. Laura, pleasure to have you with us today, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited. Also, this was an awesome introduction. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. So before we talk even about Shippo, I'd love to hear a little bit on the personal side, because you have an extremely varied background and you're extremely young as well. If I remember now, you're 26, 27, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit of, first question is, how come you grew up in so many places? And second question is, how does it feel to be such a young startup founder?
Great questions. In terms of German originally, my dad is German, my mother is from Taiwan. So I think just from both of my parents, I already grew up pretty international. Due to my father's profession, we were traveling quite a lot when I was younger. So he would work in various different countries and we'd travel with him in every country. He stayed roughly 3 to 6 years. And that gave me the opportunity to see a lot of cultures from a very young age, which I'm extremely grateful for. So I was born in Germany, but then when I was 6, we moved to Beijing, China, and that was just such a different culture. And I think seeing how people live in different worlds, in different countries, has really influenced my thinking, and also made me be really the kinds of opportunities that I was given.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a common trend. When you're exposed to, the more you're exposed to, either in terms of cultures or, professionally, we've had a couple of people in the podcast, and in general, professionally, typically consultants have that exposure, mm-hmm. because they have a lot of exposure to different company cultures. So it kind of works the same way, but it gives you that openness and that kind of, like you said, the gratitude to know what, to appreciate basically what, what is a good opportunity, truthfully.
Yes.
So basically you started Shippo when, how old were you when you started? Because you started in 2010, so then you were...
So I came to San Francisco initially as an intern to work for a Y Combinator company called LendUp. And I was interning there on the marketing customer acquisition side. And I think that was, again, such a great opportunity to be working closely with very inspiring founders and a great team. Back then, there were pre-Series A, maybe 20-something people. And given that I was an intern, everyone knew that I wasn't going to stay, and everyone is very receptive and open to brainstorming ideas with me of what I could be doing afterwards. And the ideas I brought to the table at the beginning, the feedback from the founder was always, well, this is a vitamin, not a painkiller. And if the advice he gave me was, if I want to build something and spend all my time on it, I should try to find a painkiller, something that's solving a real pain point for a lot of people, something that people cannot live without, something that is a little easier to sell than just a vitamin, which is something that's nice to have, but not a must have. So the first idea that we had, me and my co-founder Simon, was in e-commerce, actually. We thought we should build an e-commerce store. It was actually meant to be a weekend and side project. We started working on this while we were still working for other companies. It was never meant to be a full-time job. We just thought building an e-commerce store would be a good experience to learn how to run a business. And we used Shopify, we used Stripe, we used a bunch of different technologies that were already existing and readily available out there. These technologies, I think what they had in common was that they were all very user-friendly, like super intuitive to use. Really like beautiful design, beautifully designed as well. And then when it came to shipping, we like looked at the technologies offered by different shipping providers like FedEx, UPS, DHL. And we realized that first of all, we had no idea which shipping provider to use. And it was very difficult for us to compare these different rates. So it's like intransparent. And then the technologies were just not as beautifully designed as a Stripe user interface or a Shopify user interface. So that sort of frustration led us to wanting to experiment on the shipping technology side ourselves. And when I brought the founder, Zasha, that I used to work for, he told me that this is like, we agreed that this is a real painkiller. Every single e-commerce store out there needs to ship. It's just part of the business model because people don't have physical storefronts anymore. They need to find a way to get their items from their warehouses, their workshops to the end customer. And it's also like, given that this is a problem that every e-commerce store has, it doesn't really make sense for everyone to figure this out by themselves. It would make sense to have one product that is scalable, that is abstract enough for different stores to be able to use it, but also customizable to be able to fit different use cases. And that's what we then started working on. And to answer your question, I'm 27 now. We started this company 4 or 5 years ago. So I was 22 at that time. And it's been incredible here in Silicon Valley how people take each other seriously when they have ideas. I think it was like, no one really asked me how old I was. It was more around like, this seems like an idea that makes sense. And it seems like we have the right energy for it. Now that I'm, that we're growing the business, we've hired a lot of very experienced managers to help us out. And like the team is diverse in terms of age as well. And that's pretty awesome to be able to learn from people who've been in the startup space or the e-commerce space for like their entire lives. It's just really humbling to be able to learn from them.
Yes. No, but fantastic. And it definitely is not about the age, but you know, it's still incredible that you started so young. And I would say that on a graph, you probably still are standing out because typically, statistically, the most successful startups, I think, tend to be with people that have already had some experience. And obviously, you didn't follow the normal path at all. So that's, and also of course, in California, I think in Silicon Valley specifically, there's a different vibe and there's a different culture altogether. But it's just a fascinating story. And I love your analogy between a painkiller and a vitamin. Yeah. So I might steal that myself. It's a great analogy. We definitely, for a startup, you need to be a painkiller because otherwise, it doesn't quite work. So fascinating story. So moving, I mean, let's take a couple of case studies maybe for our audience. In terms of, you work with a lot of, you know, you work with a lot of clients. Tell us a little bit, maybe one, two of the more outstanding stories or case studies in terms of how you've helped them, how you've helped them increase their business, save costs, or whatever it may be that you know, what made the most impact to them by using shipping.
Yeah, you know, that's, our customers, I think what I love about our customers the most is that all of them have they're creative businesses. Like we work with e-commerce stores, but we also work with platforms and marketplaces. So on the e-commerce store side, these are people that are direct-to-consumer brands. They start out as entrepreneurs. They grow into larger brands, larger companies. Some of our customers, as an example, are MeUndies. They like make better men's underwear, and they sell that directly to the end customer as a subscription. Then Aesop, the soap brand that makes like nicely smelling soaps, Tuft & Needle that sell mattresses. And then we have a whole lot of like brands that people have heard of, but they're like innovating in like mostly on the apparel side or on the like makeup space as well. So yeah, these are some of the categories that we play in. on the platforms and marketplace sides, I think we've been able to partner very successfully with a bunch of the platforms that our customers already use. So Shopify is a partner, Etsy is a partner, Weebly, GoDaddy are two of our customers, Facebook Marketplace is a partner as well. So all of these different platforms that our customers are using in order to sell, we try to be the shipping interface there. And when our customers use Shippo, what we do for them is we give them a simple to use interface and connect them to all different shipping providers at the same time. So when an order comes in and you want to create a shipping label, we show you all different shipping options. And then once you see all different shipping options, you can choose which one's best for you. You buy the shipping label, we give you access to shipping discounts as well, because we have economies of scale that we can tap into. And then you buy the shipping label, you send your package out, but we also help you with tracking, we help you with customs, we help you with return labels. And I think when we look at direct-to-consumer brands, the really awesome thing is, or the interesting thing is that it's easier than ever to start an online store, so more people are doing it. And at the same time, Amazon and Amazon Prime have really changed customer expectations. So customers, online shoppers, they're looking for free shipping, fast shipping. They're looking like 2-day shipping has become a standard here in the US. So that's something people look at checkout. So what we're seeing is our customers, it's not just about saving time or saving money. It's also about helping them offer the right shipping options to convert more customers to grow their business.
Yes. And how, I mean, flipping it a little bit with all the guys that, I mean, with all the logistics providers and express providers to get on your platforms, to get your clients at the end of the day, those options, right? So your DHL Express, your UPS, your whichever might be RMX, your other postal services and so on. How did you manage to convince those guys to come on the platform initially? Because I mean, okay, now you just, I think it's easier. You have a brand, da, 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 but initially, I think, you know, there might have been some challenges there, right? So how did you manage to convince your first type of providers to come and join you?
Yeah, I think as in any partnership, like, we always try to think about what is it that the other party wants? Like, how can we help them be more successful? And for every shipping provider, it's different in terms of what they need. But across the board, shipping providers, I think, are on the same page with us that technology is not their core competence. They're really good at moving packages, at running their sorting facilities, at just delivering packages and all of the operational things. But building technology experiences is not what they're focused on. So I think that is one of the first things that we were able to agree on with the shipping providers. And then the next part is, we can help shipping providers reach customers that normally wouldn't be using these shipping providers otherwise. So we can help, like, a FedEx, a UPS as two examples. They are known as more of the premium providers. And an SMB, if they're thinking about saving money, they might not think about using UPS or using FedEx. But if they're able to see FedEx and UPS on our platform and see and get the knowledge that FedEx and UPS are actually competitive in certain areas and certain dimensions for certain service levels, that might drive these kinds of customers to do business with UPS and FedEx. So yeah, I think these are some of the arguments that we've been able to, we just, like, in any partnership, we try to make sure that we understand what the objectives are of the shipping providers. And all of the shipping providers want to grow their market share. They want to move more business online. They want fewer people to walk to the storefronts and buy shipping labels there. They want people to buy shipping labels online. And these are some of the things we can help them with.
And how, we've talked a little bit about Amazon Prime, and how also this company pretty much, and with Alibaba's, they have shifted the perception of consumers, right, in terms of expectations and how fast things get delivered. But yeah, at the same time, this e-commerce sites are, well, and marketplaces are, at the end of the day, or could be, a very big potential competitors for you as well, no? Or, I mean, how do you see the relationship with these guys, and how would you even compete with them? I mean, yeah, it's not exactly direct competition, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean. It's a good question. I think Amazon is such an interesting player to watch in the space, and whatever they do just sets standards across the board. Commerce are out there. So we're for sure like watching Amazon very closely. The way we look at Amazon internally is that they are not a competitor because for two reasons. On the one hand, our customers, the customers that we work with, they want to own the customer experience themselves. So they want to have their own websites, their own, they want the customer to buy from their stores, not to buy their products on Amazon. And they want to own the customer experience end to end from the moment where they discover the product to the moment where they receive the package. Meaning they want, like, if you, for example, store your package, your items in an Amazon warehouse and you do fulfilled by Amazon, your package arrives in an Amazon box. For our customers, like, the delivery process is the customer experience, where when customers open the box or see the box, it's a branded box. When they open it, it's the experience. The tracking updates they get in the meantime, the emails, like all of that just is part of the brand, that is part of something that the brands care about. So that's the one part that our customers and consumer brands, they're really built on that sort of personal connection with the end customer and the strong just brand image that they don't want to sell their products on Amazon, because Amazon is typically known for more of the generic products, not of the individualized or lifestyle brand products. And yeah. Then on the other hand, what we've seen is that Amazon has actually been really in two other ways, because it changes. Amazon Prime has changed retail customer expectations around shipping speed and shipping costs. Everyone else who's not Amazon is now trying to figure out how to offer similar shipping options to their customers. And everyone who's not Amazon, they're either lacking the scale in terms of shipping volume to be able to get these kinds of discounts, or they're lacking the scale in terms of technology resources to be able to build these kinds of technologies in-house. So people, when we pitch customers, potential customers, they're all like, they all understand why shipping is important these days. And a lot of people are also actively looking for different shipping solutions, different shipping strategies. So it's a good time for us, because Amazon is driving that sort of awareness. And then last but not least, I think that's super fascinating as well, because Amazon is building out their own carrier network. They bought planes here in the US. They're trying to ship or move more packages themselves. And that's something that the shipping providers are worried about. And they are actively looking to enter into new partnerships so that they're not as dependent on Amazon as before.
Mm. And I want to add you further a little bit in terms of your customer acquisition strategies or success stories, because again, you're dealing or you're, it's fairly broad, right? I mean, the type of clients are, again, not necessarily huge in size and are fairly broad. How do you, or what's your best level of success in terms of finding these clients? What's your success, the biggest success rates? How do you attract them on Shippo?
Yeah. So our customers are SMB e-commerce stores. That's who we directly sell to. And what we've learned is it is best to capture customers at their intent. Customer is actually experiencing a shipping problem. That's when they're most receptive to buy the fastest. So when they're experiencing a shipping problem, most of them go look online to see out there. And when they search, they need to find us. So we invest a lot in content marketing and SEO, in PR, to make sure that we're highly visible when customers are searching. And then when they find us, that we're able to convert them and activate them in a good way. So onboarding, inside sales, these are some of the areas that we invest in. Then another great way for us to acquire customers is through business development. So business development taps into the different kinds of platforms and marketplaces that already exist. So we know that, for example, on a Weebly, on a Shopify, there are a lot of SMBs that could be our ideal customers. So we form partnerships with these kinds of companies where we're able to be in their ecosystem and get access to their customers.
Mm, got it. And I was reading on your blog, talking about content. I read your blog, and I was reading that 68% considered the cost of shipping to be the biggest challenge operationally. And basically, shipping has become a key consideration in the purchasing process, to the point where I think the number was 31% of consumers will wait to make a purchase until there's a free shipping offer. Just kind of insane numbers, really. So to this, building upon this, the question that I wanted to ask you, and obviously this is one trend, but do you see any other important e-commerce trends coming up or that will shape the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah. So I think personalization is another thing that's been pretty big. When customers go, different kinds of customer profiles go to the same e-commerce store, being able to see the kinds of product content that will convert this specific customer. So customization is a big one. I think it's in terms of the customization, personalization in terms of what you see online. But the other trend that is fairly similar is customers are actually craving products that are authentic. Products that tell a certain story, that tell a certain, reflect their lifestyle, their choices. So I think especially millennials, and with the rise of social media, customers are just looking to buy personalized products. And then when they go online, they're expecting that the stores show them the right products based on their preferences.
Got it. And how about, so you're in US, I sit in Singapore. US is one thing, Asia is another thing. There's different, you know, there's different, Europe is another thing. How do you, are there certain differences that how are you trying, or will you try to engage in Asia, for example? Tell us a little bit about the, you know, in worldwide type of scheme of things, you growing and expanding, how you see things.
Yeah, so right now we're active in Germany, France, UK, Canada, Australia, and the US. I think whenever we talk about being active in these international countries, it means that we have local shipping providers. So some of our international shipping providers, FedEx, DHL, UPS, as the examples, like we have them integrated and you can use these shipping providers anywhere. But to be able to be competitive, we always need to have a couple of local shipping providers that ship nationally, internationally, but that offer other competitive rates in addition to the international express services. So, so North America, Western Europe, and Australia is where we're currently where we currently have a local carrier network built out. And I think we're excited. Like, our goal is to have the world's biggest express carrier network on our platform. Like, our goal is once you sign up, no matter where your warehouse is, where you're shipping from, no matter where the end customer is, you should be able to find the best ship. And in China or Asia, or China specifically, I think what really fascinated to see the rise of a lot of shipping solutions and shipping companies that do delivery just in mainland China. That's been really interesting to see. I think a lot of it has all by Alibaba and some of the carriers that they either built themselves or choose to work with. So the Chinese market is a tough one, but I'm also very excited about being such a big one and innovation coming from there.
I mean, I can share in terms of, again, I mean, I'm based in Singapore, but I've been traveling to China quite often. It's mind blowing. Basically, the capabilities that they've got and they've managed to build, okay, mostly driven by Alibaba and JD.com and the e-commerce players are just fascinating. Like, you can get, literally, you can get deliveries within an hour. So let alone 2 days, it's basically within 1 or 2 hours. And it's getting to a point where basically you don't need to go to the supermarket anymore, because it's in front of the television, and I don't know how healthy it is, but you sit in front of the television and basically you get it delivered at your doorstep. So it's an incredibly fast moving market, probably the most, I mean, I might be as bold to say, as the most advanced in the world, or advancing in the world. Companies like SF Express might be an excellent partner for you, and I'm sure you're already talking to those companies. So yeah, definitely very good, very interesting. And I don't know, I haven't seen on your website, do you collaborate with Singapore Post?
We don't right now. We don't.
Okay, so maybe I'll introduce you. I have a few contacts. So.
And that'd be great.
We'll take the plane. Free of charge.
yep.
So, with the thought process, yeah. But I mean, indeed, Asia is a fascinating market, and not to talk. I mean, also not to forget Southeast Asia, which is developing. But you have different sets of challenges here in Southeast Asia because 7,000 islands. You know, in terms of deliveries, mm-hmm. it can be a total hassle. But again, wherever there's a big problem, as you said, the right painkiller will be sold in boxes, right? So, there's an opportunity there. So, definitely, maybe also markets that you can look at.
I think it's just that one last thing. I just think it's so amazing to see how some of these new shipping companies have been started very recently to solve these crazy problems around, or like problems that we don't have in the US around some addresses might not exist, or you need cash on delivery and there is crazy densities of traffic. And it's been amazing to see that sort of innovation coming from Asian shipping providers.
Yes. Yes, because I mean they have to adapt to the local market here, and I mean a large percentage of the population outside of China. So in China, the crazy part, and I was there a couple of weeks ago, the crazy part in China, you cannot almost make any more payments in cash because they look at you like you're some alien. However, it's not the same problem in Southeast Asia. After the population does use cash, so it's the same for e-commerce. They need to pay by cash. They don't have they're unbanked basically. So, and I wanted to also kind of bring the conversation more towards the softer element, so towards the people side of the business. You work in executive search, and people make or break companies. So when you hire people at Shippo, what do you typically, and especially your leadership team, right, especially the people that you have a co-founder and you were sharing that you had to, and you hired more experienced managers, but what are some of the key attributes that you looked for when you were hiring and when you are hiring the top management of Shippo and to take the company forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been thinking about that quite a lot because we've been building out our leadership team this year. And there are a couple of things that I'm looking for. I think at this stage in the startup life cycle, where we're still so early, typically there are two different kinds of profiles for execs coming in. The builders and the people, the scalers, people who scale something. We're still so early that I'm looking for someone who has the quality of a builder and is then able to scale it as well. Meaning that they can't expect that things are built out already, but they need to come in, maybe figure out a couple things and themselves experiment, then start scaling them. And I think some of the mistakes I've made earlier interviewing was like, not understanding that these are different profiles, that people who are expecting to only scale something, they will not enjoy having to build things from scratch. So that is one first learning. Then I think in line with that, I'm just looking for people who take full ownership over a department. So our leaders, they're like, it's very clear that they're functional leaders and they have that sort of functional expert. I'm also looking for them to be willing and able to take full ownership over their teams, their team members, and making sure that they come to me with solutions, not problems, that they always think in terms of solving things and don't come to me and look for solutions from me. Then the other thing that I am quite adamant about is culture on the skill side. Like I really, like I want every leader coming in to raise the bar for everyone else on the team and be willing to do that for everyone else on the team. So whenever we hire someone, like that person wants to make everyone else on the leadership team work harder. And it's a really humbling, including for myself, leaders that I look up to. And then I want to be a better CEO to be able to make sure that this person does not regret the decision to come work for me. And I think that there was like We always look for people who have no egos, so people who are humble. I'm willing to learn from, I'm excited to learn from them, but they also need to be excited to learn from everyone else. So low ego types. I think one of our other investors has had this really interesting saying. It's, I don't know if I'm able to swear on this podcast, but what he said was better a hole in the organization than an asshole in the organization. So I think that is just phenomenal. Yeah, it was. And because culture, it's, God, look at the founders around like, what is the worst behavior that they tolerate? And if we tolerate bad behavior, like it'll just set a bad precedent. So yeah, making sure that we don't have any assholes in the organization, that people don't work, that people enjoy working with each other.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. It's not exactly a curse though, but yeah, it is a curse. It is a curse to have assholes in the organization. That indeed is a curse.
Oh yes.
And I could not agree more. Yeah. And unfortunately it's so prevalent, unfortunately. And, especially mm-hmm. I think the biggest chance of this happening is typically in sales teams where you have a top performer, that becomes quite egotistic and arrogant and, you know, thinks he or she is the top of the world. And then it really affects the overall team. That can happen, of course. And then, but yeah, anywhere in the organization, pretty much where you end up in this situation, it becomes toxic. So, spot on. And I wanted to ask you also, again, you're in Silicon Valley where there's tens of thousands of, you know, top companies, top startups, top ideas being explored, and people trying to make it. What's your challenge? What's your most challenging part in terms of attracting the right talent to Shippo, particularly, right? Because you have so much competition.
No, it's been a question that I've been thinking about a lot as well. So I think the first thing to realize is that because you're in Silicon Valley, or for any employer, like all of the people working for you, working for me, like they come to work by choice. They come here because they want to work for us. And it's a choice because in Silicon Valley, they could go and work anywhere else. There are so many other companies that are looking to hire people. Our people are all very smart. So they could go, but they choose to come work for us, which is something that we as founders, me and my co-founder, were very, very grateful for. And I think that puts a lot of responsibility on the founders then as well. I learned that you start out as a founder where it's just you and your co-founder, and maybe a couple of people. And that is just, you need to be determined, persistent, work really hard, just never give up and run through walls. And then as you start, I tried to learn how to become a manager, and managing people, distributing resources, it's a different skill. And then now that we have people that are not being managed directly by me, but a bigger team, like roughly 70 people already. Being a manager is different from being a leader. Being a leader who inspires people that don't directly talk to me every single day. And that is a lot about communication. It's about showing up authentically. It's about being able to articulate the vision, the mission in a way that like inspires learning experience. I think that is something that like only smaller startups can do. Like at a larger startup, at a larger company, like one of many people here at Shippo, what we can promise people is the work that you do has an impact, and it has an impact every single day. And it's something where people can come in and make a difference. And that's the kind of talent that we're also looking to attract right now, like at this stage, the talent that wants to build, the talent that, wants to like be take ownership, be held accountable, that wants to like really have that sort of experience where they're a part of something from the very beginning. Then I think what we're able to tell people is like we work with SMB customers, and SMB customers are really relatable. So it's like a lot of them don't have venture funding. They're running real businesses. So when they are able to improve their shipping processes or not have to worry about their shipping processes, it makes an impact on their lives as well. I would say the biggest challenges that we have, we're competing against like Facebook, Google, all of the other big tech companies that are here. Apple is another example. And the salary is competitive, the benefits are competitive. Everyone is looking to hire for the right profiles. And I think, yeah, that is like one of the downsides of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, come to Asia. open an office in Asia. Not that there's not a lot of competition here as well. It's just that, yeah, depending where you go. And you're one of the few. I mean, not few. I wouldn't say necessarily few. It's more and more. But you're obviously less than males, right? So let's put it this way. So you're a female founder in a, I mean, for lack of a better word, male-dominated industry. Not that, you know, typically politics are also male-dominated in a lot of things. That's why I think the world is in trouble. But how has this affected your journey so far, right? I mean, I imagine that there might have been some challenges related to this as well.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I'm so glad that people are talking about this now. It's good for people to be aware of. I think we are in a space. I've always tried to, especially in investor meetings, to converse and put that front and center, our growth, our customer numbers, and have our investors focus on these kinds of things. And I think at the end of the day, when it comes to fundraising or even when it comes to customer acquisition, like, people are trying to find the best companies, the best solutions to work with. And so we always try to highlight that. On the other hand, like, for recruiting, I've actually, I see across the board people who are male and females who are looking or impressed by female leadership and wanting to experience a culture like that. And that's been really positive for attracting talent. What else? It is always a little surprising when you walk into a room and there are a lot of B2B tech leaders and you're the only woman. It just feels strange, but I enjoy what I do want to be out there and for people to see that there are successful women founders.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's growing. And great. I mean, great to have such examples like yourselves, because I think that will also encourage more and more. I mean, the more you see, the more other people get inspired, and more female founders we will get. And we are getting already. So I think that's fantastic. And if I'm to look, if you are to look back at your journey as an entrepreneur, maybe share a little bit with our audience some of the key, right, in terms, and you've mentioned some, but, you know, maybe in terms of the best parts and in terms of the worst parts.
So I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I started this business. To be very honest, I think when my co-founder and I started this company, we were just excited about solving a problem. And when we were incorporating, there was this line in the document to fill out, and it said CEO. And let's put my name in there. And that's that was not like such a informed decision to make. I think people often look at founders and think all of the answers, and that is not true. There are a lot of instances where there is fear, uncertainty, where you don't know what to do. And what's been helpful for me is having a support network of lots of other founders around me, showing me that this is, and that other founders who are more successful have gone through the same kinds of problems before. At the beginning, I think the most important quality, or this entire time, the most important quality has been determination and persistence. Like, as a founder, my job has been changing every quarter or so. Like, there is always something new to learn. Whenever I think I'm somewhat good at my job, something else comes up and I need to learn it from scratch. And it's amazing, because it's a great learning opportunity, and it's you condense an entire career into, a couple of months. And that is... yeah, that's awesome. But it's also you need to be able to power through, and there's ups and downs all the time. Like, 1 hour, an email might come in where a customer has canceled, terrible. And the next hour, an email comes in where a big partnership has been signed, and suddenly everything is very awesome again.
yes.
And I would say my latest learning, the latest one has been, working more on interpersonal skills around communication. Yeah, something I think, at least in Germany in school, like they teach a lot of different classes, history and maths and everything around that. Each class is around how to communicate with other humans. And it's an
yeah, they should, yeah.
It's an important skill. Yeah, so I've been working on that, learning how to improve my communication, how to be clearer, how to resolve conflicts, how to be more inspiring, how to, yeah, all of these communicational skills, how to give feedback, how to receive feedback. And yeah, I wish I learned that earlier.
Yeah. Final question. Looking back at the Shippo story so far, what are the things that make you most proud?
It's a good question. What has made me most proud? I think 2 weeks ago, we went on a company offsite, and every year we take the entire company on a company. As a founder, I have this bad quality where I always want more. Like, there is always the next milestone. There is always the next partner to sign, the next customer to sign, the next funds to raise. And in that moment at the offsite, when I looked at the room full of people, everyone coming to the offsite to work on a vision, an idea that Simon and I had, that was like 70, 80 people in the room, all these smart brains about my idea. That was amazing. And yeah, I want to have more of these. You know, it's not about something specific. It's just about how crazy it is that all of these people get together to solve, to work on my company.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. Laura, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all the good stories, mm-hmm. sharings, painkillers and vitamin analogies. Yeah. And, you know, and also I will definitely remember the one with the the curse, let's call it like that. it's been a pleasure, and really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and good luck in growing Shippo to the even bigger and higher heights.
Thank you
for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamario.com/podcast for all the show notes, links, and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. So please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.